This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Thanks, Emma, for taking the time today to come on our show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Emma, why don't we start off with telling our listeners a bit about yourself and your business?
Well, my business came as a bit of a surprise to me, to be honest. I grew up in a public service home and a public service family. And when I went to university, that's sort of what I had in mind for myself. I always did design on the side, more as like a, I guess they call them passion projects, although that always sounds, I don't know if I can use that word. I always did it on the side and loved it, but I just didn't grow up with that notion that you could even be a designer. It wasn't really a thing. Designers were for really wealthy people, which I certainly was not. But then as I did get a job, I did the classic route, got a job with the government, was very, mostly happy working there until I wasn't, like most of these things, right? So during my maternity leaves, I started sort of developing my decorating sort of capacity and design capacity. And I started working for friends and just sort of, then I took out a business number and I was still working for the government. And then finally, like one day, my kid got lice for the seventh time. And I was talking to my boss and I was like, I have to stay home again. And they were like, well, can't you find someone else to do that? And I was like, no, I cannot find somebody else to pick lice out of my son's head. So because I had already taken the number out, and actually they were offering buyouts at the time for public servants, and I did have 15 years there. So one person I knew really didn't want to leave. And a friend said to me, you know, you get this chance like once every 15, 20 years in government. So, you know, take it. So I did. And that was sort of my startup loan to get my business started. I used my buyout from the government and I set up in my basement. Actually, at first I set up in my daughter's nursery, which was interesting because our basement was too gross. But yeah, started up in my daughter's nursery with a shoebox for receipts and started working just little by little for friends and then friends of friends. And then I hooked up with a contractor, like a carpenter, and started doing bathrooms and kitchens. And from that's sort of how grassroots started.
Wow. The accountants listening to this program love to hear about the receipts in the shoebox.
One of the first things I hired was a bookkeeper.
There you go.
So I was like, you know, I'm going to get into trouble. This is all completely above me.
And there's a big sigh of relief now from all the financial people listening. So Emma, how long ago was all this?
13 years ago now.
Congratulations. 13 years in business for yourself. That's a real milestone. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's hard to believe that it's been that long, actually.
What were the first few years like?
The first few years were kind of, like, thinking back on them, they were sort of, you're so naive about it that you're not as worried, actually. You're just kind of like throwing yourself into it. And life was really busy. I had three kids, I had to manage them. My husband traveled a lot for work. And and I just kind of approached it with insanity. I just would like every minute I could work, I did. But when I couldn't, I couldn't. But I would work, you know, 9 o'clock at night, seeing clients Saturday morning, Sunday afternoon. So working kind of around my husband's schedule, and I had just enough sort of energy. I still had a lot of energy back then. I have a little less now, which I miss. So yeah, so you're not, I was making barely enough to, but I was making sort of first year, I think I made $13,000. My loan was technically from, you know, my buyout. So I knew that that would like get us through sort of 18 months of mortgage payments. So that was kind of my, in my mind, after 18 months, if I hadn't been able to at least get some like clues that I could maybe make it in this business, then I was going to, you know, in my mind, I was going to maybe go back and find another job. But after 18 months, you know, I was still kind of moving in the right direction. I still wasn't, you know, certainly wasn't Donald Trump. And I love how Donald Trump's little loan, by the way, is like $1 million. Like I had a 20K extension on my line of credit. That's it. So, but yeah, so it just kind of went from there. And as I got more and more into renovations, then I could kind of, I built up a clientele around delivering really good work and also working with small spaces. Like I like working with small spaces. It's really interesting for me. It's more environmental. So that kind of became my niche. And from there, you know, grassroots is still somehow surviving. COVID was awful for a lot of small businesses.
Yeah.
As we know, I lost a lot of friends. They lost their businesses, or a lot of us are I'm certainly still feeling the effects of COVID. But so far still standing.
Good for you. And what's your clientele? Is it commercial side or is it residential side or both?
Definitely residential. I love houses. I love homes. I love the stories they tell. I love being a part of that story. I always, when I hear myself speak about design, I'm like, I never thought I was an earnest person, but I sound so earnest, but it's because I really, you know, our homes affect so much of what we do and how we can, and they don't have to, you know, everybody can make the smallest apartment to, you know, the biggest house. They are all beautiful for different reasons. In university and in my early 20s, I would always make sure that my spaces looked nice, and it was just by being creative. But also I think with the environment the way they are and with the cost of things the way they are right now, renovating within the framework of your house is becoming more and more appealing. It used to be, you know, doing a big addition was what people that was their first project. If they bought a house, they thought, well, I'll make it bigger. Now people are thinking more along the lines of, well, can I live within this framework and just do more like custom cabinetry? So I don't have more of my house to heat. I don't have to buy so many materials because materials have become so expensive. And that sort of working within the framework of the house and just making the spaces still be beautiful and functional is kind of my jam. It's what I do and it's what I really like to do. So, and the other thing I would say is like my aesthetic, which is like very, I would say, colorful and a bit whimsical, a bit wacky. You know, if you like that sort of, it's more like sort of a English kind of hitting mid-century. It's if you like that kind of stuff, we're one of the only companies that do it. If you don't like what I do, then you will go to see someone else, and that's good too. So I've definitely, most of the clients who come through my door right now, they've seen my style, they like it. So it's a different kind of sales. It's just more about, you know, can I deliver what they want and for something, and if I can, then we usually work together.
It's a very personal connection you're making with your clients, isn't it? Like you said, you're going into their home, you're making suggestions for their living space. Is that intimidating at all for you?
Every time it's intimidating. Yeah. It's because you're also always entering kind of a client, you know, it's an exchange of money. Whenever there's an exchange of money, it always kind of complicates relationships. And you can, you know, there's a lot of things that go wrong in construction. So maintaining that sort of conversation, and then you also get attached to these people and you care about what they think about you, and you care about their finances, but then you have to make a living.
Yeah.
So it's very, it's a very, very difficult balance. And I can't say I've ever figured it out.
Was that tough for you, given the, you know, given the fact that you didn't have I don't think you had a sales background, correct? And really, that's what you're selling, right? Or marketing and selling. So
yeah,
was that tough?
Well, I sold popcorn for Cineplex when I was in high school.
Oh, there you go. No easy consumers there.
Easy. Yeah, I ate a lot of popcorn.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about some of the lessons you've learned along the way. So why don't we just make it open-ended for now, and then we'll get into more details as I hear the answers. But is there one or two things in particular, lessons that you've learned that you say, you know what, boy, if I could give any advice to anyone that's either currently running a business or, you know, wants to start a business. Well, actually, why don't we start with someone who's currently running a business that may be struggling a little bit. Any advice you'd give to that individual?
Well, I think one of the reasons I'm still in business today is because every time someone would tell me, you know, a lot of the advice people would give me was actually, you know, you can do your own website, you can do your own photographs, you can do your own bookkeeping, you can do, there's a program here, there's a program there, you can do your own administration. And actually, every single time I made enough to hire someone to outsource those professionally, I did. So as soon as I could afford a bookkeeper, as soon as I could afford an office manager, I knew that it was better to make less money and to try to focus on what I was good at, which was designing and clients, and getting people to, you know, do my website, do my photos, meant that I would be able to always keep sort of within the realm of what I was good at. I think that really, really helped me. And I still really believe in that, because even if I was a tiny business, my website always looked super professional, because it was, and my photographs looked, I invested really early on in getting good photographs. And that was, so I think that's one of the, some advice I'd give to people. So hire good people, don't try to get people to volunteer for you because you're a small business. It's everybody needs to make a living, and it's good to pay for good services, and it'll help you in the end, I think, build your company in a really professional way. So that's definitely some advice that I would give to people. And the other thing is like, invest in your voice. So it takes a while as a sort of, you know, a designer to, you know, there's sort of, when you get into design, there are certain rules that they tell you, like every room has to have black. Every room has to have this. This baseboard should be 5 inches if the ceiling is 8 feet. You know, there's all these sorts of rules that people live by. But as you sort of do what you do more and more, don't be afraid to be like, you know what, I just don't see that in this space. I see this or I see that. And, you know, why does every kitchen have to be white? And why does every backsplash have to be a subway? So just to like, in sort of play and create and challenge kind of some of the things, because what you want to do is create a product, whatever your product is, that's unique, because then people will come to you for that product. And then you get to do what you want to do more often. So if you create a product that, so now I have sort of a look and feel to my designs, that if people go on the website and they like it, then it's a, it, they'll like that. So I'm not, you know, and if they really like more sort of subdued design or beachy or all those other ones, which are still totally beautiful, but there's people in Ottawa who do that better than me. So I'm not the best fit for that person. So, and then it means that you get to narrow down and expand, but kind of zone in, I guess is the right word, on what you love. And if you love what you're doing, you're going to do it better.
So it's interesting. I just wrote a couple of notes here. So if I think of both answers you just gave, or two pieces of advice you just gave, one was talking about, you know, farm things out, know your strengths, in other words. But he also mentioned, you said know your strengths again, but from a design perspective and how it relates to the business. So I would argue, correct me if I'm wrong, both of those, you have to be self-aware, right? Like to know what you're not good at. I know when we're working with entrepreneurs and, you know, we get involved with them from a marketing perspective, we take a look around and they're trying to do so many things themselves, yet they don't know they think they know what they, but in fact, they don't know. That makes sense. And I think it's a bit of an interesting mindset that an entrepreneur has, because I think by our nature, we're strong-willed, we're determined, we're all of these great things, but sometimes that kind of gets in our way too, that we just kind of, you know, I'll just do it myself. I'll just get it done. I'll do it myself. And I think sometimes that harms you. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think that one of the best compliments you can be given as a human is that you're somewhat self-aware. And one of the things for me is I've had terrible ADD since I was like a kid, one of the first girls in Ottawa. And, you know, growing up, they didn't really understand back then how ADD worked with girls. So I've always been very, very aware of what I'm not good at. And thankfully, I think because of my parents, I haven't been too embarrassed that I'm not good at those things. So, and, you know, my friends and who have always kind of my family and, you know, my husband, they just know that my brain cannot do that and it does other things. So when I seek help on those things, I genuinely know I can't do it well. I genuinely know it'll take me so much longer than it would take them. And so it's absolutely worth it. I think if I had a mind that could maybe like sort of do some of it, that may have been more challenging for me. Like I may have had run more into that problem, because when I design where I'm more confident, I definitely have trouble not having like total control over the end product. Like with my clients, I'll be like, well, you know, I think we can do better. You know, it's hard to let go sometimes, but with administration stuff, I know that people will be better at it than me. And the other thing that I've learned is that people who like to do things, you know, some people love administration. That means that they're going to do it better than you and they're going to do it faster than you. You know, when I go into a house and they ask me to choose paint colors, you know, it'll take me 20 minutes and they'll say like, I've been agonizing about this for, you know, months. And I'm like, well, then I would be unemployed. Like, you know, like our brains all work in different ways. And some people's brains love doing the things I hate. And that means it is money well spent. But maybe if I had been more average at those things, I would have tried. I don't know. But I knew it was terrible for me. So.
Well, but for years, I mean, there was a school of thought that, you know, okay, shore up your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And now the latest school of thought is no, really focus on your strengths and find people that'll help you with your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage anyone listening that I think that's the way to go. But I'm curious to see if you agree with this, Emma, but it also means you can't ignore certain things. If you're not good at finances, let's say, mm-hmm. and you own a business, that's not necessarily a good combination. So either you've got to have somebody that is good at the financial side of your business that you really trust, or at the very least, you have to educate yourself enough to know that what you're seeing is the truth and what you're seeing, you know, whether you're making money, not making money, how is cash flow? So I think that's the only area I would argue that you have to have a good understanding of is the finances of your business, whether you're a numbers person or not. Not necessarily do it, but at least understand it. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And I would say it's definitely one of my weaknesses as a business owner, because it's very hard to keep on top of, especially as your business kind of grows, actually how much money operationally your business needs to work. And it's always changing. Material costs are always, labor costs are always changing. And so unless you're really, you're constantly keeping up to date on like how much the day-to-day costs to run your business versus how much you're billing out, you can really get into trouble really soon, quickly. So actually that's just one of the changes I've made recently is I've hired a permanent bookkeeper, because it was going over my head and I knew that I had to get some better advice on how to manage the finances of the company so that I knew what to charge, so that I knew what was fair, and that so we could actually make more of a profit. It's very, very, very hard to make a living as a small business. I would say that's really, really surprised me. I mean, you can make a living, but for after 13 years, you know, I certainly haven't figured out the magic number or the magic percentage, or like what is fair versus what is gouging versus what is not fair, you know, and having that conversation with people is difficult. And there's a bit of you know, in my business, there's a bit of a, like, let's make a deal kind of thing when it comes to construction and renovations. Like, hey, I'll throw that in, or I'll throw that in. And that's been one that I've really struggled with, because, you know, I don't think anybody should have to work for free. And if I'm throwing things in, then it means I'm basically, but on the other hand, like, it's business and everybody likes a good deal. So how do you balance that? It's really hard.
Yeah, for years, you know, I've been balancing that. And the way I personally approach it, this may help some of our listeners. If they want something for free, then I say, okay, well, what do you want to take out?
Yeah.
So they know right from the get-go that, you know, they're not going to be able to run me over in a negotiation.
But yeah.
This is the cost we've already determined is fair. You want something added on. Okay, what are we taking up? I'll gladly add something on, but you got to take something out. And that usually stops the conversation in its tracks, or they're very genuine. They say, yeah, actually, I would prefer to take that out and add this. No problem. Yeah. Math is still the same for me. So
that's good advice.
There you go. And what about anyone listening that's thinking of starting a business? We've touched on a lot of different things, some of the challenges when we're first starting a business, and, you know, good for you. You had some runway financially that you were able to, you know, to give it enough time to see whether or not it's an actual business. What advice would you give to someone that's sitting there, maybe sitting on the fence, that's thinking of starting a business?
I think it's good to, like, actually find something. People say this all the time, but if you do find something you love and you're good at it, find a way to market it. And also, maybe, I know this sounds strange, but don't think about it so much, because there's so many reasons why not to do it. There really are more reasons not to do it than to do it. But if you do it, then you'll find out, and you'll know, and you'll either know that it is something you want to do or something you don't want to do. But either way, you'll have the answer to your question. And the best thing somebody said to me, the best advice or thing that, like, threw me into it was, I was like, but what if I fail? What if I fail? What if I fail? And she said, well, then you just get another job. And I was like, true. You can almost forget that you're still kind of coming into owning a business as someone who's somewhat skilled, hopefully. So, you know, if it doesn't work out, just like if you paint your room the wrong color, well, you just repaint it. Nobody's going to know. It's not going to, and then you'll have that, you'll know that you gave it a go.
When I was, I think I was 26 at the time, I was married a couple of years, bought our first house, and I decided to start my own business. And man, oh man, people came out of the woodwork. You're crazy. You just, what, you know, if it doesn't work, I said, so I sell the house. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, worst case scenario, that's what I end up doing. And I'd rather at least try these things, you know, later on in life, and say, look back and say, at least, and you know what, it didn't work out, but I didn't have to sell the house. I found a job, and then I started another business years later. I think that's really good advice. And I don't think, Emma, you know, want to make sure we're clear here. We're not saying being flippant about it. That's not what we're saying, but don't hesitate to give it a fair shot, and see what happens. Correct?
Absolutely. Like I would add, yeah, I had done some groundwork. So I still kept my job for a while and had done some groundwork in terms of, I'd had some part-time jobs on the side before I completely, you know, went into it. But I did that realization that if I failed, and I was like you too, I didn't like, you know, the cost of failure has to be manageable. So it's the same thing as you. If I had failed, it would have meant having a bigger line of credit on our home. And if I got a job after failing, I knew that, you know, eventually, you know, we would keep paying that down like every other middle class, you know. person. So, but I know that I'm lucky. I know it's not that, you know, luckily we had that. Not everybody has that. But it did, just that notion that nothing is irreparable or forever or permanent was definitely helpful.
It's great. Anna, listen, we're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this. Before we let you go, where can our listeners find out more about you and your company?
You can check out my website, grassrootsdesign.ca. You can check out my Instagram. That's where we post all of our designs. And sometimes I like to give a little bit of advice, which if you find helpful, you can use.
Thanks again, Emma. I really appreciate you doing this.
No problem. Thanks for asking.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.